Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the final Indiana Jones movie so far. 2008's Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Directed by Steven Spielberg. Now, Brother Jay, you had never seen this movie before?
Nope.
And Drew, you had?
Yes.
Okay, let's start with Drew then, because I had not seen it either. So Drew, first time, this time?
Very similar. I don't like this movie. I didn't like this movie. It was a lot better than I remembered. It's still not good. Yeah, there's a lot of wasted talent going on. Makes me question the whole Shia LaBeouf thing. I hope Cate Blanchett got a lot of money. Hope Harrison Ford got a lot of money. But yeah, not great. This is definitely, I'm not going out on a limb. I'm not breaking any new ground here. This is the worst of all four movies.
Brother Jay?
I don't even know where to start.
You loved it.
No.
Your
no.
Favorite of the four.
No, I actually have so much disdain and hatred for this movie, I didn't even bother to do any research to look anything up. I don't even care about it. I'm so apathetic. First of all, there was no cohesive linear plot that was seemingly any kind of, I don't know, the theme. There was no arc. There was no story arc. It was all just kind of one scene that didn't make sense into another scene that didn't make sense into another scene that didn't make sense into something that was completely different. So, I don't know. And it was a lot of bad acting and really incongruous set pieces and ridiculous farce into the improbability beyond any reason and beyond any... I don't have enough bad words to say about this movie. yeah, I don't know. I had problems from the beginning, not the least of which is a really bad Russian accent. There was a lot of wasted screen time in this movie that didn't need to be there, that there could have been much better things going on. And instead, we suffer through really stupid scenes that get put in this movie that don't add anything to it. That don't add anything to the plot and actually, I think, detract from the movie in general because it just makes it drag on and on and on and on.
Siafu.
So, I kind of like this movie.
Oh, Lord. Well, I'm glad one of us did.
I mean, it's not a great movie. I mean, I'm not going to go out on that far of a limb. I think it's the second worst of the series because I still think number two... is just not as much fun as this movie. I had fun. The only scene or the only action set piece in this movie that I didn't appreciate was the vine swinging scene because it just was ridiculous. And the other thing was at some point somebody should have encountered a tiny scorpion.
That's true.
But other than that, I thought it was great. I thought Shia LaBeouf was fine.
He was fine.
He was fine. Well, he got the Renner treatment, right? They wrote this so that he could take the reins of the franchise, and then the reaction to it was so meh, and him specifically, like, it just died right there.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. I mean, that's interesting. I don't know. I thought it was fine. I mean, you know, the opening scene where Indiana Jones looks every year of his age, I thought was going to be a bad deal, but it ended up being fine. The less work he had to do, the better, physical-wise. I don't know. I thought it was fine. And certainly, it was a way out there kind of premise, but it's no different than the Ark of the Covenant or the, but three stones, five stones, whatever in that second movie. I can't even remember what the MacGuffin was in the third movie, and we just watched it.
The plot wasn't any goofier than any other movies. It was, I think, just execution.
Yeah.
I mean, where the previous movies relied on mostly, almost exclusively practical effects, except for the way supernatural stuff, this movie used a lot of CGI, a lot of not great CGI.
True.
And it's really a shame.
Well, and, you know, we've learned...
I want real ants.
Well, yeah, we've learned that CGI doesn't hold up because of just the nature of technology. Mm-hmm. So that's why practical is almost always better, even if it's a little cheesy.
Well, at least practical, you can forgive the practical because you're limited by physics and reality. But the CGI, you can't. Bad CGI is just bad CGI. Like, sorry, you cheaped out.
Yeah.
Or the technology wasn't ready, and you should have gone practical. So
well, that's why I hate CGI blood. Because it just looks the worst. You just turn on the sci-fi channel and you'll see nothing but CGI blood and gore. Like, you could make a movie without blood and gore.
Who wants to watch that?
Yeah,
I really expected at the end the theme from Close Encounters. I was waiting for the aliens to play the notes.
Should we go through the plot? I mean, it's not actually a very long plot. Because that way we can pick things apart in a little bit more organized fashion. Because I do have lots of problems, don't get me wrong. But I honestly had a good time watching this movie. You know, maybe it's because I just needed an escape from work life. Now I'm a whole different attitude because I get to escape from work for the next week. So I'll be happy about that. Now, granted, I'm kind of in lockdown, not imposed by anybody, except that there's not much else to do. And I don't particularly want to go out and do stuff, obviously, in public. Not only would it break the law, but it just seems ridiculous. Anyway, 1957. Colonel Dr. Irina Spalko, Kate Blanchett, and a convoy of Soviet agents posing as U.S. soldiers infiltrate a military base in the Nevada desert. They have captured archaeologist Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford, and force him to lead them to a crate in Hangar 51, which holds the remains of an extraterrestrial creature that crashed 10 years before in Roswell, New Mexico.
And already we have had an inexplicable, unnecessary scene.
The scene of them breaking onto the base?
Or the scene of the car race.
Yeah, the scene of the car race. What was the point of that?
I thought it was fun, though.
Is that like some American Graffiti wannabe?
Yes.
I think that was just to set the time and place.
Yeah.
I think they could have flashed 1957 on the screen and that would have set the time and the place.
Well, they did.
I thought, you know, again, I was worried because, you know, they weren't driving very safely and they were all going to die if there was a crash.
Here's the thing. I didn't care if any of them died. I was not invested.
Yeah, turns out they weren't even important. So Indy uses both gunpowder and shotgun pellets to find the crate, which has magnetic properties.
Yeah, I don't think gunpowder is actually magnetic.
Don't know. Well, yeah. No, it's not magnetic. It would just have to have iron in it. Gun experts, call in our gun hotline.
So it's the same warehouse that has the Ark of the Covenant, right?
Yeah.
Because we see that.
Yep.
They changed it from, what, Warehouse 13 to Area 51 or whatever?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And so they didn't even
bother to keep in their own convention. They just shat all over everything.
And since The Last Crusade, Indy became a spy?
Yeah, he had exploits. Because this is, of course, post-World War II.
Or was he really a spy all along?
Well, that's where we end up with Ray Winstone, who plays his partner Mac. But Mac
they work
is
together in the OSS.
Yes, Mac is a. Turns out he's working with the Russians, so Indy wants to call his father and have him send lawyers, guns, and money.
They'll get him out of this.
Yeah. So we have this elaborate vehicle chase and a fight and a rocket sled. It's kind of fun. And then he stumbles upon a nuclear test town and survives a nuclear blast hiding in a refrigerator. Very Fallout.
Because the force of that refrigerator tumbling over wouldn't have killed him just on itself.
I still think there would be an issue of like maybe his lungs being blown out of his body from the winds blast. Going back and forth. Yeah.
The pressure,
possibly. Isn't there like a vacuum effect somewhere along there?
Yeah, but the Bernoulli effect.
Hey, that's how planes fly.
Yeah. The higher the velocity, the less the pressure.
Ah, there we go.
So if it whips really fast next to you, it'll lower the pressure, which means if the pressure is lower on your outside, your insides will push themselves out.
Oh,
that sounds unpleasant.
Can diagnose a hernia faster than anything.
Because you're looking at it?
Yeah, you're holding it in your hand. Oh, hey.
Ew, so it's basically like putting a peeps in the microwave.
Yeah, a little bit.
Ugh. So again, what was the point of that?
It was cute. It was an idea that Steven Spielberg wanted to shoot.
It wasn't cute. That's the problem. It was unnecessary and not cute. It didn't add anything to the movie.
Well, it puts a ticking clock on the movie because of the giant radiation blast. And he's dead within, like, what, 6 months?
No, I think he's going to die of cancer, but it'll be a couple of years.
I don't know. It was probably only, like, what, 4.3 millirunkins?
Well, that's...
Not great. Not terrible.
Yeah.
Not everyone will understand that's a reference to Chernobyl, so...
Oh, but if they're a fan of ours, they have listened to the Chernobyl podcast.
We sure hope so.
Then they should go watch Chernobyl first, and then... Well, I don't know. It's almost like a docuseries, so we're not going to give anything away that hadn't allegedly happened. You know, there's a big fire still, right? It heated up again?
Yes.
So, you know, the world is going through some stuff. And also, there's a radioactive fire in Russia. Oh, Ukraine, sorry. Yeah, it's
God
complicated.
Damn it, Chernobyl.
Exactly.
Why now?
I think perhaps the planet might be giving us a message. It's time for us to go.
Oh, as Spalding Gray would say, the mother is tired. Mother needs a rest. I best throw myself off a boat. So... Indy returns to Marshall College, where he's offered an indefinite leave of absence to avoid being fired because he's causing problems. So, at a train station, he has actually lost his allure, apparently. But at a train station, Indiana is stopped by a greaser, Mutt Williams, Shia LaBeouf, and told that his old colleague, Harold Oxley, John Hurt, disappeared after discovering a crystal skull near the Nazca Lines in Peru. Jones and Mutt go to a local diner where they discuss Ecuador, known as El Dorado, crystal skulls, and the Uga tribe.
Mutt's outfit was specifically Marlon Brando, right?
Yes.
Like on the waterfront Marlon Brando? Yes,
100%.
So, two things. When I heard Ecuador, all I thought was Agador Spartacus from The Birdcage.
Yes.
Also, when I saw John Hurt's name on the screen, for some reason, I was like, William Hurt's in this. And I kept looking for him. And then as soon as I saw John Hurt, I was like, oh, I'm stupid.
Yeah. William Hurt would have been great. He's great in everything.
So we have a very Back to the Future sort of 1950s sort of scene there.
Yes. It's almost... Yes, it's ridiculous.
And there's a chase by Soviet agents. There's Oxley. You know, in the original script, the Oxley character was supposed to be like Ravenwood.
It was supposed to be Ravenwood?
Yeah.
Okay. That would make more sense.
Yes. We have this letter, blah, 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 maps and X's and things. So they go to Peru, where Indiana and Mutt discover that Oxley was locked in a church-operated psychiatric hospital until Soviets kidnapped him. In Oxley's former cell, Indiana discovers clues to the grave of Francisco de Orellana, a conquistador who went missing in the 1500s while seeking Acator Spartacus.
Good morning.
Not yet.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, what is this, sludge?
Yes, it's sludge. I thought I'd make a nice change from coffee. So why don't you tell me you think bad last night, you bad man? I would not have been so sassy to you.
You put some clothes on.
And man, why don't you let me be in the show? Come on, aren't you afraid of my watermelonness?
Your what?
My watermelonness, my natural heat. You're afraid I'm too primitive, right? To be on the stage with your little estrogen rockets, right?
Oh, yes, you're right. I'm afraid of your heat.
They're just the aspirin tablets with the and the S's scraped off.
Exactly, yeah. Something about shoes make me fall down. So,
I don't wear shoes. I will fall down.
Indiana finds the crystal skull that Oxley hid in Oriana's grave. So, this crystal skull thing. Did you know from the beginning that this was going to be a Whitley Strieber joint?
No.
Well, yeah. I mean, they stole an alien from the warehouse.
Yeah, there's that.
When's the last time... Sorry for the tangent. Take a shot. When's the last time you watched the We Are the World video?
Probably the year that it was produced.
You should... It's worth a revisit. It is amazing.
I remember... Gary Trudeau, cartoonist Gary Trudeau, had a whole segment.
Doonesbury.
Yes, there was a whole segment in Doonesbury, like a month or two, about We Are the World, and it was hilarious. Yeah, Doonesbury. That was interesting.
We Are the World. It is an amazing collection of talent. And then there's Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of like the last Indiana Jones movie, right?
There's also weird stuff, like Stevie Wonder... during that one point says, "We are the world, shalula shalamba," or whatever, speaking a language that no one in Ethiopia spoke. It's like Swahili or something. And then I remember, I can't remember if it was just strictly Bob Dylan, or it in my head, it was Eddie Murphy doing Bob Dylan, going... This is Choice of Megan. We're saving our own lives. It's to make a better day. Just you and me.
Nope, totally accurate.
Yeah.
It's like he was reading the words for the first time ever while they were recording.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he probably was.
No doubt. And maybe even they were spelled out phonetically.
You know, Bob Dylan has his first number one song. Just this month.
Wow.
I don't think those numbers count anymore.
A 17-minute song about the Kennedy assassination.
I believe that the charts are so easy to get to number one these days. I don't know that those metrics really count for anything.
Well, there's that.
I mean, because anymore you sell 100 songs and suddenly you're number one because nobody's buying anymore. They're either stealing it or borrowing it.
I know there are several of our listeners who are big Bob Dylan fans, and it's so interesting because
I like Bob Dylan.
Well, I like probably a dozen Bob Dylan songs. Mm-hmm. That's not even true. I probably like more than that. I like a dozen Bob Dylan songs that are sung by other people.
See, I was going to say, I love Bob Dylan's music and his lyrics. I can't stand his voice. If other people cover his songs, I love them. If he's singing them, I would rather drown myself.
I bet you have the same feeling about Tom Waits.
Yes.
Yeah, because Tom Waits does that same thing to people. He writes beautiful songs that are sung in Tom Waits' voice, but when they're sung by, Bruce Springsteen or Rod Stewart, they have a much bigger following, let's say. They're much more popular.
Agreed.
However, it would be interesting to hear Bob Dylan sing a Tom Waits song.
Dionne Warwick.
Yeah, he said Dionne Warwick. Wow.
Yes, it was.
Oh, that's awesome. And what is it? Prince wouldn't show up because Michael Jackson was there, or vice versa?
Michael Jackson was there.
Yeah, so Prince wasn't.
What, they had beef?
Yeah, something like that.
Where's the beef?
Wait, which one of those was the one that didn't like weirdos?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Oh, let me tell you, that's the only part of the Dave Chappelle show that it really sticks with me, is Charlie Murphy's stories of hanging out with Prince, or visiting Prince's house once.
Charlie Murphy.
And they played basketball, and Prince is a good basketball player, but he was in full Prince regalia on the court. So if you get a chance, there's a video of Charlie Murphy talking about Prince. Anyway, okay, sorry. So, yeah, we can visit. Well, what about Band-Aid?
Yeah.
I mean,
I just actually finished. See, we're not talking about the movie at all.
No, it's fine.
I just finished the Andrew Ridgeley book, so.
Oh, well, and how did that go?
Fine. It was pretty interesting. He's a pretty interesting guy to listen to. I mean, it wasn't him, but it was his book.
Hey, I just, on your recommendation, I just finished the Flula Borg book.
Oh, how did you like that?
It was wild. It was, I had never even heard of the guy before, but
Jennifer,
I think his
you're a party pooper. She poops at parties.
His enthusiasm and his accent, yes, and his self-deprecation make me, I find him endearing.
Yeah. No, he's one of those, like, you don't want to like him, but he's adorable.
Have you heard him, Drew?
Nope.
His whole first chapter of his book, like probably a sixth of his book or more, is all about Point Break.
His favorite movie of all time.
Yes.
Well, he sounds like a genius.
He's not a genius, but he's like I said, he's both entertaining and kind of adorable.
The first time I came in contact with him was, I was at work, and my work wife at the time, Aurora, was like, you have to watch this. And it was his, if you search on YouTube for Flula Borg, which is spelled exactly like it sounds, and Party Pooper, he has a thing. It's all about idiomatic expression. And it is seriously one of the funniest things, because he is absolutely, I think, genuine in his delivery. I think he's really like, Jennifer, you got problems. I was thinking that for you, Brother E, I highly suspect it scratches that Wolfgang itch that you get.
Yeah, I do.
Yes, yeah.
You're absolutely right. Oh, you've nailed it.
I work some hours in an office, you know, and the groups of people stare. They're talking, and one say about Jennifer, eine Kollegin, she colleague. Oh, I tell you, Jennifer, she is really a party pooper. Really? Jennifer poops at parties? So she poops at parties, so and people know this? I poop at parties. I poop at parties, but people don't know because I close the door. Jennifer goes to the party and then poops, but she do it so people know. Where do she go for it? Does she visit a water closet and make door of the open so people may see and smell things? This sound horrible. Maybe she go like by the tables with the gift and the present and the punches bowl. Poop on the carpets. This sound like, Jennifer, you have some mental issue. Have you spoken to someone about it? This serious, you make a poop in the party. So people may know. I want to go to parties with Jennifer just to make observation. She poops at parties.
Yep, I didn't realize that itch needed scratching, but yeah, It was what, like 6 hours of Wolfgang?
It was great. It was a great diversion from reality for me. It was because it's not heavy lifting. It's not highbrow, but it's hilarious.
And you know, you compared him to Borat, which because of the accent, you get it, kind of get it.
That's not why I compared it to Borat. I compared it to Borat kind of because he was interviewing people that I think he was trying to promote, but also make fun of.
Yeah, but not as mean spirited.
Nor as exploitative. The surfer dudes were nearly impossible for me to listen to, though.
Well, were those characters?
I don't know. I don't think so. Been
characters.
I don't think so.
Either way, it was fun.
It's genius. It is worth it. It is worth your 6 hours of time, Brother Drew.
Yeah, Flulaborg, Vonderlust, I think is the, or Vonderlust in the USA or something.
Something like that.
And again, there's no reason I should like it as much as I did, but thank you for making that recommendation because it's crazy.
I just had to share it with somebody because it was one of those things I just picked up from the library and I was like, this is amazing. He's really a regular on the Conan O'Brien show. So he's got there's a lot of YouTube of him on Conan O'Brien. And again, he sells it legit when he's with Conan O'Brien. So
he cracks Conan up, which is hilarious because just his turns of phrase are wonderful.
Sure. Cause he gets the idioms wrong.
Yeah.
Which is expected. So
now if we find out that he actually in real life just has a Bob Dylan voice, I would be very disappointed if he wasn't actually German.
I think that's really him. If you look at the old pictures of him, he looks like a little German boy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so sorry. I think I interrupted you originally telling a tangent, Jason, but...
do you? I don't even remember what we were talking about.
Anyway, you know, it's funny because... This was not as bad a week as I thought it was going to be for our town. It was a busy and very complicated week for me personally at work, but it's fine. If anything, I'm feeling way less stressed than I thought I was going to feel. However, the world is still in a little bit of a shit. So it's like this movie and to a probably a greater extent, Flulaborg was the escape I needed.
This movie was the escape you needed?
Sure, because this movie...
Good Lord.
Again, it's like cotton candy. It's a confection. It's just... It satisfies or passes the time, but it's also gone as soon as you ingest it. You don't even remember it was there.
It's cotton candy if the cotton candy is composed out of ass and fail.
That's a rough chopped basket, I'm just saying.
Composed of ass and fail. I think that was my yearbook quote.
Hey, at least your yearbook had pictures in it, unlike these kids these days. This year's going to be rough for the yearbook committee.
You know, what's funny is we came home and we were catching up on some mail, and my wife found this.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, oops. I guess that's not happening. Oh, well.
That's... Drew's Children's School Charter School Yearbook.
Yeah. It's almost like when you told me not to renew our grandmother's subscriptions.
Yeah, well.
What?
Well, what? I think I used the phrase when she was just diagnosed with the leukemia.
Oh.
No, she was full on like in the hospital.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I kept a New Yorker subscription going for her in the last few years.
Oh.
And I had like just renewed it and I was checking it was really early days of the podcast and I was checking in with Eric about how she was doing. He's like, "Well, don't buy her any subscriptions." It's like,
oh, you're a terrible person. I'm so ashamed of laughing.
It's just a very apt description of the situation. Like, you know, right, she's okay today, but I wouldn't buy her any magazine subscriptions.
Very apt, but I just had it. It simultaneously tickled my funny bone and broke my heart.
So. Yeah. Yeah. You broke Jason.
This is exactly the kind of Flulaborg experience you needed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know, that conversation, I believe, is captured on like episode like 5 or 9 or something.
Okay, excellent.
Oh, dear Lord, I'm fine, really. Wow.
You know, sometimes we just need a little release from this times of...
I was going to say, maybe this week was more stressful than I thought.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, you don't even know what happened today. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Okay, so, listeners, you might never know. So, anyway.
Yeah.
So, we have this crystal skull.
Sorry, Mom.
That,
he's okay.
Yeah.
He's okay, everybody. That really didn't sound good, but he's fine.
Was it a Mad TV sketch or was it a Saturday Night Live sketch where they talked about it was Bob Dylan and Tom Petty. Who was the third?
I don't remember. That was a Weekend Update.
Oh, yes. Dang. So funny.
It might have just been Bob Dylan and Tom Petty.
That's what it looks like.
No, settling, settling. Never done. Quan Su, still so far. Yeah, she's a good girl. Mama, Jesus.
Was it Dana Carvey and
David Spade is Tom Petty?
Oh, wow.
Oh.
David Spade's program that, of course, now isn't on because nothing's on. Although I think they do. He's done some interviews like for the web. But I kind of like his show. At first, I was a little skeptical, but, lights out with David Spade.
Has he had Norm MacDonald on?
He's had all of those guys on. I think he had Norm MacDonald, Kevin Nealon, and Dennis Miller on at the same time. It was like the Weekend Update group. Yeah, he gets an amazing amount of people. And it's really short, and the format is just dumb. He's also a very sort of charismatic guy. Self-deprecating. And so back to the movie. Alien skull, blah, blah, blah. We find out that when the Soviets capture Indiana and Mutt and take them to the camp where they're holding Oxley, as well as Mutt's mother, Marion Ravenwood, Karen Allen, you know, from the first movie.
It was really great to see her, but she didn't get to do anything.
No, so Indiana learns that the Soviets believe the skull, which magnetically attracts even non-ferrous objects, is from extraterrestrial life form and holds great psychic power. Oxley has suffered a mental breakdown due to overexposure to the skull's powers. That's why Kate Blanchett's character, as, again, she's neither an Ilsa nor an Elsa, but she's the very, like... the Soviet version of the uptight, like German leather wearing dominatrix sort of character. And she's also psychic. So anyway, Marion reveals that Mutt's real name is Henry Jones III. So it's sort of funny that Henry Jones Jr. goes by the name Indiana, which is the name of his dog. And Indiana Jones III goes by the name of Mutt, which is the name of some dog somewhere. Non-specific breed of dog.
That is interesting.
Your claim is that that was funny?
Okay, you wouldn't think it was the least bit clever? Hey, we'll call the kid Mutt, you know?
I thought it was super hacky, like Seinfeld wearing rainbow suspenders hacky.
Yeah, okay. So then they escape the Soviets, go through this whole vehicle chase involving a sword fight, and we have swinging on vines, which again, I didn't like that. And we have Siafu ants, which I don't know if they're a thing.
Yes, they are.
I was hoping that these would be the little scorpions that were mentioned before.
Although I don't believe Siafu attack humans, but Siafu have the when they outgrow their colony, they create like a little ant superhighway, and then the queen gets balled up into a ball of the little workers, and then it rolls down this river of ants until they find the end point.
Seems quite alarming if you ran across that in nature.
Well, and because the queen looks like this giant, like, sausage thing. It is horrific.
They're supposed to have one of the most painful bites, right?
I don't know. I would guess so. I think they're largely in Australia, I want to say, maybe. I might be totally wrong.
Well, they're right next to the crystal skulls.
Yeah, I would say that it seems very Amazonian, but I don't know. Australia is known for everything that will bite you and kill you, so chances are. So, they escape in an amphibious vehicle, and then they arrive at the Temple of Akator, a Maya-style pyramid in the Amazon rainforest. Claiming that he is a CIA double agent working against the Soviets, Mac enters the temple with Indiana and his group, but he's actually leaving a trail of homing devices for Spalko to follow. Now, Was this movie before or after Apocalypto?
After.
So it just ripped off the scary Amazonian people or Central American tribe from Apocalypto? Or is it just a trope?
Well, I think Apocalypto ripped that off from history.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe. I shall stand corrected. Beep! Get a clear edit point so I don't have to mention Apocalypto at all. So, was this movie better or worse than Apocalypto?
I think worse.
Okay.
Apocalypto actually had aspirations.
This movie's only aspiration was to have a good time.
Wasn't Apocalypto filmed entirely in a dead language?
I've never seen Apocalypto. My understanding is that Mel Gibson's in it, and he at some point gets real drunk and calls a cop a dirty Jew. I may have been mixing history.
That was his career apocalypse.
Oh. It was
very well done. No, he was only behind the camera for Apocalypto.
Oh. So, next week, Apocalypto. But for this week, we'll continue to talk about the Crystal Skulls, because we're almost to the end. So, we enter the temple, and there's some shenanigans to get in there. And when they finally get in there, we've got the 13 crystal skeletons, which is missing a skull, and they put the skull back, and then shit starts to go down, and interdimensional portal, and Spalko gets sucked up into the portal, and then everybody else manages to escape, and then the giant flying saucer escapes out of the mountain, and then the Amazon pours into the valley and covers all the remains of the village and any kind of existence of this whole group. Who, by the way, the aliens were a group of archaeologists. Dumb.
Sure.
However, none of that is particularly interesting, and because it's all CGI, it doesn't, like, the ants didn't really work because the ants are all CGI.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't give me that creepy crawly feeling as if you saw a bunch of real ants.
Right. The most creepy crawly feeling in the entire movie, which is never really touched on again and never explained, were like the two feral children in the graveyard.
Yeah. The little zombie children.
Weren't they just part of the larger group? I call them the Apocalyptos. Well,
it's never clear.
Aren't they in entirely different locations?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the range of an Apocalypto tribe is. Now playing for the Peruvian Apocalyptos Center.
I like how you wanted a clear edit point so you wouldn't even have to mention Apocalypto.
By the way, the Siafu, the male Siafu, known as a male driver ant, is known as the sausage fly.
Yeah. Okay.
And when I said he looked like a sausage, I was more accurate than I knew. They leave their hill when they run out of food, form marching columns above to 50 million ants. Mm. They're considered a menace to people, though they can be easily avoided. A column can only travel about 20 meters an hour, so they're used for pest control on farms and houses because they'll eat pretty much any pests in their way.
That seems overkill. Wow. Also eats pests? A bunch of alligators.
Yeah, their bite is apparently super painful and super strong. Let's see.
I think they're the ones that popularized the craze of holding magnifying glasses to the sun.
Males leave the colony soon after hatching, but are drawn to the scent trail left by the column of the Siafu once they reach sexual maturity. When the colony of driver ants encounters a male, they tear his wings off and carry him back to the nest to be mated with the virgin queen. And then he's killed. After mating, the queen will lay 1 million eggs per month. Such is the strength of the ant's jaws that in East Africa they are used as a natural emergency suture.
Oh, no.
Their use of ants as makeshift surgical staples creates a seal that can hold for days.
They get the ant to bite you and then, like, what, pop the head off?
Yes.
Ah. It's way more interesting than this movie.
It's true, yes.
They are mean-looking things, by the way.
You wouldn't know it from the movie. Does it talk in that article about the ants having an aversion to alien skulls?
By the way, that's pretty much the end of the movie. Indy returns to Marshall College, where he is made an associate dean, and also he and Marion are married. And then the next movie in the series is all a Shia LaBeouf vehicle.
It's called Honey Boy, right?
No, I think that's the working title was Indiana Jones and the Peanut Butter Falcon.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've heard of that one. Haven't seen it.
It's actually, like I said, it's actually kind of a sweet movie. Kind of a stunt, but a sweet movie. Anyway, so let's dispense with this movie. Brother Jay, any notes?
I want to know how it is that she knows how the crystal aliens work and what they're thinking before they're thinking.
Which she are we talking to? About Spalco?
The yes.
Because she's psychic, remember?
Whatever.
That was pretty much my reaction to this whole movie. Whatever.
And she made the point that knowledge was their treasure, but no one got the knowledge. So there was no treasure.
She did.
Well, not for very long.
No, but she got all of it.
So the theme of the movie, the whole moral of the story is be careful what you wish for.
That seems generous. Sure.
So, any more notes, Drew?
There was zero chemistry between Indy and Marion in this movie, where they oozed chemistry in the first one.
Because she was too old for him.
By 45 years. Yeah, but there was also zero chemistry between Shia LaBeouf and Indy.
True.
Like they had nothing about their relationship was interesting. It was such an eye-rolly moment during the reveal that he was the son.
Yeah, I knew it was his son as soon as he was on the screen with it just was obvious.
Yeah, and the way they revealed it was so hackneyed. Quicksand.
Yeah.
This is an Indiana Jones movie. They're better than that.
Well, actually, it's not quicksand. It's anyway. I did miss biplane blimp chases and stuff. That's what this movie needed more.
Yeah, because this movie had a duck.
It did. That's pretty funny. So okay, so Brother Jay, verdict?
This is a D movie. This is the same as the last two. Worthless, not worth my time. Again, so bad I was apathetic about it. Like, I didn't even care to hate it.
Drew, was it worth it?
No. Absolutely not. No. This makes the other movies worse, somehow.
It retroactively kills them?
It really does. This movie is just, it's a bummer. It's completely forgettable. It's like a complete counterweight to all of the fun and cleverness of the first three movies. I don't want to say it was just a complete cash grab because they came back to these characters after so long. There was, a 15-year break?
Yes.
Between the movies? That, you know, that if you're going to go back after that amount of time, my assumption is that you have a really good idea for a story to continue the story of these characters. And it just wasn't there. It was like no effort was put into coming up with an interesting story or interesting villains or interesting new characters. It was like they just had an idea and then they went to go shoot the movie without having a real screenplay. It's sad is what it is. This movie made me sad because it was just so lame and forgettable.
Yeah, this was a victim of bad writing.
I think
that the talent could have gotten better performances, but I don't think any of them had anything to work with.
Yeah, it was like a series of bullet points. Hey, let's make the bad guys the Russians. Okay, cool. Hey, let's introduce his long-lost son. Okay, cool. Hey, let's bring back Marion. Okay, fine. Let's instead of supernatural or biblical, let's make it aliens. Okay, fine. It's almost like Mad Libs.
Yeah, let's have a nuclear explosion.
I expected better.
George Lucas wrote the story.
No.
Of course he did.
But, you know, I think maybe he gets story credit because of the original. Because it's David Kopp who's wrote the screenplay. David Kopp also wrote Stir of Echoes, Spider-Man 2002, and Mission Impossible 1996, and Jurassic Park. Yeah, so he does adaptations, I guess. But not as good as Charlie Kaufman, of course. So, I don't have anything to add. I think maybe you guys convinced me this is a crap movie, although I still had a fine time watching it. I mean, I don't hate this movie at all. I thought it was a fair way to escape life for a little bit. So if you want to, if you give yourself over to it, it's fine. Now, granted, in comparison, today I watched a movie called Ghost Image that was on Amazon Prime. That I thought was going to be maybe a little bit of a supernatural thriller or something, starring Elizabeth Rome and Stacey Dash. And I got...
Wow.
Yeah, I got like maybe 3/4 of the way through the movie until I figured out what this was. It was like, oh, this is like a Lifetime movie. I mean, it's not literally a Lifetime movie, but it's a movie that could have been on the Lifetime channel because it wasn't very interesting. The performances were a little bit all over the place, but there was absolutely like no sex and very little violence, no blood, of course. So yeah, it could have been in After Hours on a Christian channel.
Sounds like a hoot.
I watched the whole thing. So it, I also watched the movie, what's it called? Antrim, which was, a horror movie. The premise is there's a movie called Antrim in 1979 that was a cursed movie that killed a bunch of the people that screened it for their own, for the different film festivals. And the one theater it was shown in burned down with everybody inside and all this stuff, right? I mean, obviously, it's a sort of a found footage sort of fake thing with a lot of subliminal or not quite subliminal messages like thrown into this really dull story. And I was hoping it would get better every single minute of the 90 something minutes it is. And it didn't. It was, you know, oh, well. You win some, you lose some.
That sounds exhausting.
Well, yeah, they just tried. They tried so hard to make something interesting, and they just didn't quite get there.
Have either of you seen Booksmart?
No.
No.
I watched that the other night. Maybe last night. I don't know. It's been a long week. Do you mind if I spoil a little bit of the premise for you?
No.
Because it's...
Give us a minute. Everybody, skip ahead 1 minute.
Yeah. What I really appreciate about the movie is the premise is the main characters are these two super smart, goody two-shoes girls who it's their last night of high school. They're graduating the next day. And they're kind of social outcasts. But one of them is going to Yale. The other is going to Botswana to do humanitarian work. So very highly motivated. And
is Jason Bateman one of the parents?
No.
Okay.
But the premise I really appreciated was the girl who's going to Yale, who is a bit of a social outcast, she gets into a verbal conflict with some of the like the loser kids, the stoners, the partiers, gets into a fight with them. And she tries to take the high road, but is very smug about how it's pretty much like, I'm going to Yale, so you guys are going to be pumping my gas. But then the other kids drop the bomb on her that, one of them's going to Yale too. The other's going to Stanford. And one of them got hired directly by Google. And this kind of wrecks her because she's been so focused and straight-laced because she just wanted to get into a good school. And it destroys her that these people who didn't seem to take school seriously and partied all the time also got into good schools.
Did you enjoy the movie overall?
I did, more than I expected to, actually. But I thought that was... a very, very clever and kind of heartbreaking premise.
I also watched a movie I got from Netflix, like where they mailed it to my house. It was called, it's a 3-hour documentary, French documentary called The Cat Without the Grin. It's about the socialist revolution movement in the 60s and how it basically failed. And I was like, oh, this would be interesting because it talks about the death of Che Guevara and the overthrow of Allende or whatever. And there was some other thing that happened. And then how the movement kind of petered out under its own weight or whatever. I didn't really get the whole point of it because so the movie's in French, right? And I start watching it and I realize, okay, it's in French. I'm going to need subtitles. So I turned on the English subtitles, and the English subtitles gave me subtitles for almost everything but the overall narration, which is a lot of the movie.
Sorry.
Oh, and also the newscast started it. So I'm like, okay, hold on. Let's go back. And I decided, fuck it. I'm going to just turn on the English dubbing, right? The English dubbing did the English dubbing for the narration, but not for the interviews of the people who are speaking French. So it's like, who made these decisions? I could not figure it out because I had to watch it even with the English dubbing and the English subtitles. I was still missing parts of the movie. And I'm like, fuck you. I'm done. I'm sure I can look up the Socialist Revolution on many a YouTube channel. Get it done in less than 3 hours and call myself lucky. Not a recommend. The Cat Without the Grin. Forget it.
Okay. Crossing that one off the list.
I decided not to see The Joker, though, because I figured this is not the time.
I should have done the same, and instead we plowed forward through like 6 episodes so far of the War of the Worlds miniseries.
And
it is excellent. It is really excellent. It is.
And what is that on?
Epics.
Oh, sweet.
It's remarkably well done. It's not American. It's clearly not American. It's a reimagining of the War of the Worlds. It got greenlit for a second season, but as we know, it's whenever that happens, because nobody's filming right now. But as I got through like the third episode, the first episode, by the way, scared the crap out of me.
Is it all tripods and stuff?
The aliens?
No.
It scared you like with tension and jump scares, or it scared you because of the like existential threat?
It scared me because of the existential threat, but also scared me just because of the action and the sets. Because the first episode, I want to say you don't, I think the first episode and maybe most of the second episode, you don't ever see the aliens at all. So it's really tense. But just what happens, and it, as I was watching it, I'm realizing, I'm like, I don't know if I should be watching an apocalyptic movie during the middle of an apocalypse. So maybe not the best timing on my part. Because the bleak downfall of humanity and the dregs that are left, and, you know.
Well, okay, on one hand, I'm a little disappointed in this apocalypse. Or, I guess not apocalypse, but this is our dystopian present. I imagine that our dystopian present, you know, Mad Max style. Yeah, you know what you can't get right now? Football shoulder pads. There's no sporting goods store that opens. You can buy those shoulder pads that everybody wears in all those Mad Max movies.
So if you want some existential dread and some, you know, just depressive but beautiful, beautiful scenery, the War of the Worlds, it is amazing. It will scare you. It scared me anyway. So, but I would recommend
the episodes.
They're an hour.
Oh, okay.
I think they're like 56 minutes a piece. Yeah. So if you have access, it's amazing. And then the other thing I got sucked into on Netflix, which is, I think, only 4 or 5 episodes, was the Aaron Hernandez miniseries.
Oh, that seems a little bleak.
Oh, that was kind of fascinating. So it's well done, I think.
Did you guys see the Joel McHale wrap-up of The Tiger King?
No, not yet. Yes. We haven't watched the last 2 episodes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I think it's a worthy wrap-up.
We were holding out. We're just kind of, I've been rationing it. I don't want to.
Can I give away one little thing?
Are you going to ruin it for me?
No. Just his first husband gets teeth.
Oh, I saw that already.
Yeah.
That was like on CNN.
Yeah. Well, like,
thanks for the news, CNN.
You know, you only take so much death count news.
So part of being at home, working from home and having children is, you know, sometimes you just have to bite the bullet and be a shitty parent and tell them to go watch TV because you and your wife both have teleconferences you have to be on. It's been a busy, busy week for both of us. My wife's last week at her current job. And so my children have been watching a lot of TV, but it led to such a great, great moment that I almost don't feel bad about it. My children have been into two things lately. One is Barbie Life in the Dream House, a show on Netflix. The other is a series of movies, some of which are on Netflix, very similar to Barbie, but with monsters. It's called Monster High, series of movies. My oldest daughter has also become fascinated with the fact that I can look up stuff on my phone about movies, like especially animated movies. I can look up on IMDb like what the voice actors actually look like in real life. So she does that a lot to me. She's like, show me this person, show me that person. And the other day, she she said, can you look up for me who does the voice of Barbie? And I looked her up, showed her the picture. And she called her sister over. She's like, Emma, come here, come here. And she had me look up someone from Monster High. And I looked her up. I was like, huh. And showed it to her. She's like, Emma, I was right. They are the same voice. At that moment, I just wanted to hug her so much. I was like, oh. Oh.
Do you remember what the actor's name was?
No, but it was the one who played Barbie and Frankie Stein on Monster High. But yeah, she inherited my voice thing. I'm so happy.
She did.
It's going to ruin so many things for her, but it made me a proud papa. That's my uplifting story for the week.
That's awesome.
That's excellent. I have the same talent. I used to ruin lots of things for myself that way as a kid.
Drew used to amaze me with the ability to tell, like, in three notes, who was doing the voiceover on the commercial.
Oh, yeah.
It's Kate Higgins, by the way. Kate Higgins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Kate Higgins. My daughter's a big fan. Thank you.
You should look up, I think her name is Gray Griffin now, but it used to be Gray Delisle. She is, I think her, like, her Twitter thing is, or maybe her website is thevoiceofyourchildhood.com. Because she's been in everything from, like, Batman and Justice League stuff to she was in the Book of Life, and she was a Wow Wow Wubsy, and she just does voices for everything. It's amazing. And she's also very funny. Oh, she's Daphne in the new Scooby-Doos.
Nice. I heard an interview with her on a podcast. I wish I could remember which one. But she talked about how earlier in her life she won like a amateur stripping contest.
Yes, I think she was the voice of Adam and Eve for a while. Oh, no, she was the voice of the Playboy Channel, rather. Yeah.
So she gives good voice.
Her mother, she was interested in goth bands in her youth, but her mother was a born-again Pentecostal.
That seems like a difficult choice to be born again into that one.
She started out singing gospel songs and then became interested in stand-up comedy and then did voice acting. And so now it's tons of animated series and video games.
Nice.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow. And maybe rambling, that's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.